Hello and welcome to the BA Brew. I'm Mike.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Debbie.
And today we're going to talk about service. What does service mean to you then, Debbie?
Okay, so we're all customers of organisations. And when we engage with an organisation as a customer, what do we expect? We expect to be treated with courtesy. We expect that whatever it is we've booked or ordered or purchased to be what we want. So we expect accuracy. We might tailor our expectations around level of quality, depending on things like price and availability. But ultimately, what we want is our needs to be met. And what we expect is that the organization will deal with us well. And I think we also expect if something goes wrong, and it can and does, that it will be sorted out quickly. So there's an element of responsiveness in there as well. And if we get all of those things, and if we feel that we've dealt with what we've been dealt with well, fairly, accurately, and with responsiveness, then we're probably likely to go back to that organization again. The thing that I think sometimes you encounter are organizations where they're quite slow. And I don't know about you guys, but my time is quite precious to me. So, you know, something that's not very responsive really can be very annoying. But also, if something does go wrong, that they don't take ownership of it. And I think that, again, really causes me to have concerns about the level of the service that I'm offered. So that's sort of where I am with it.
It's interesting because we often talk about things like the value proposition as what an organization is proposing to the customer and being used to set and manage expectations. But there were quite a few things that you mentioned that aren't really covered in the value or not explicitly covered in the value proposition. And some of the elements of the value proposition don't seem to be well considered by some organizations. Jonathan, what were you thinking in terms of that?
So agreeing with everything that Debbie's said there. But I'd kind of think, if I'm going to engage as a customer with an organization, I want to deliver against its promises, which links to the value proposition. But what I think infuriates me is when I engage with an organization and it doesn't do what it's promised, and it tries to negate or to blame someone else in the ecosystem or to blame even the customer for things going wrong. But the basic level, I want it, the organization to deliver the product or the service as per their promise. And I think that quite often organizations just don't do that. And this is where that when there's a problem, you expect them to respond quickly and with some sort of sense of urgency and consideration, but often they don't. And I think this is a real issue where we as change professionals, business analysts, service designers can help to forecast where things might work or where they won't work, and how we can help organizations to be a little bit more customer-centric in what it is that they do. The other thing that really winds me up, and it's the thing that I want to be listened to as a customer. So if I raise a problem with an organization, or if I say, could you help me with X? And they say yes. I want them to listen, join the dots on what it is that they're doing, what the impact might be. But I don't think I'm asking for, I don't know, a gold-plated service every single time. Just keep your promises, listen, and be empathetic is kind of what I want as a customer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, it made me think of a number of examples of things where I think the company's expectation of what I wanted as a customer was not quite well aligned to what I wanted. So there's one particular story I tell you on a number of courses about how I ordered a pair of trainers for my wife. And that was a fairly straightforward transaction. We identified the trainers, which was quite a challenge in itself. But from ordering it to receiving the items, there were about 18 communications and then further communications afterwards. At pretty much every point in their process, they were confirming how things were going. And my expectation, if I'd have bought the trainers in a shop, would be I'd select the trainers, pay the money, take the items away, and the exchange would have been maybe a little bit of a chat at the till at that point. but just one communication, not 18 communications over a number of days. I won't name the company or anything, but so there's had an expectation that I needed to know all that information. And as you said earlier about not having lots of time to do things, that's 18 things that I've got to look at to determine whether there's something important in there for me to do something about.
Did you not want to be spam then, Mike, about these trainers?
I didn't tick the "I would like to be spammed" box. I didn't realize that was there on the order. But yeah, I can understand some people might want that level of communication, but I would have liked to have opted out of that. Sorry, Debbie.
Well, it's just interesting, isn't it? Because Jonathan said about keeping promises, and I think because I know I have definitely ticked or unticked depending on the particular organization, "Please don't contact me," and I've also unsubscribed to no effect whatsoever. And that again is part of the overall process of engagement, isn't it? But I think as well, some of those emails that you get where you can track your order, when you go on to track, it doesn't give you any information. And so this sort of keeping promises, they're making additional promises and they're not fulfilling them. But I think my particular bête noire at the moment, because this has happened a number of times to me recently, and it comes back to sort of timing, is when I might order something online to be told this is your delivery date. And sometimes if you pay extra, this is your delivery date, which I might have done, and then it doesn't arrive on that date. And that really to me is an absolute breaking of promise. And yet all you get is an email saying, "Oops, sorry about that," but you're not actually going to get it on the date that you thought. And that, I think, then starts to break down trust, and it shows a distinct lack of empathy for the customer. So I think, you know, there are so many different elements to service that organizations need to think about. But I think making a very explicit promise and then breaking it is not good. It's not good optics, as we might say.
Mm-hmm. And that leads us quite nicely into thinking about, well, what happens when things do go wrong? What should happen? Jonathan, would you like to sort of lead on that?
I had a recent example where things were going wrong with a service provider. It happened to be my internet service provider. And I rang them up to say, "Look, I'm not getting the internet that I'm paying for. Could you investigate?" And I spent probably about an hour on the phone tweaking settings with my router, restarting it, checking all the cables, even did a video call to show them the cables at the back of my router. And they said, "Oh, all right, we've changed some settings behind the scene and I hope it will fix things, but you need to call back tomorrow or just see if it's working tomorrow." Call back the next day, spend another 45 minutes to an hour with a different operative trying to get the thing fixed, and they couldn't fix it. But they fobbed me off with some kind of, "Oh, we're going to investigate and we've changed another setting." So on the third day, go through the same process, fourth day, same process. And by this point, I'm not able to do my job. So it's having an impact on my ability to do my work. And I'm wasting 3 to 4 hours on phone calls trying to get my internet service provider to provide me with the service that they promised and I was paying for and that they'd offered and delivered to me successfully for the last 4 or 5 years. But what they were doing is they were basically ignoring, or they weren't aware, that there was a national issue with their broadband service. I only found out about that because I raised a complaint and they finally sent out an engineer to the Hine, and the engineer told me that there was a national issue, but the people that I was speaking to in their call center weren't aware of this national issue, and therefore they had, in terms of an emergency response, they were basically ignoring that there was a problem and passing the buck or not being proactive. So I raised the complaint, and then they promised they would call me back the following Monday at 2 o'clock. So I wait for 2 o'clock and I get no phone call. So I've already raised a complaint. They're not delivering the service that I'd paid for. And they then promised to call me. It's a bit like Debbie. They're saying they're going to deliver you your goods on the day. They're promising to call me. So they're wasting my time. And that's when I'm in a complaint situation. And still that internet service provider hasn't acknowledged that there's an issue, and they haven't fully fixed my issue at this moment in time. So I'm in the middle of this complaint. And at one point, talking to one of the operatives, they offered to sell me a different service with a different service provider. They also started to quote terms and contractual conditions to me, saying that they have 30 days to rectify a broadband service issue. But it's just basically not listening, not being responsive. And it's, sorry, I know I've just ranted now about a recent experience, but for me, it's ecosystem ownership, the ecosystem ownership of what service you're delivering, and making sure you've got emergency response. You listen with empathy of your customers. And that's just one example in the last week or so where I've not felt listened to, and I've just felt very let down by a particular service provider.
I mean, that sounds like they've got no real understanding of the impact it's having on you at all, and not responding to. I had a problem with a mobile phone where I had a number of calls to the service center, and escalated it because it just wasn't being resolved. And they said, "Oh, well, we can send you some compensation." And the thing, and I thought, well, I'm not here for the compensation. I'm here for you to solve my problem. And they said, yes, we can send you £2. That's the maximum we can send you. And I thought, I've been on the phone for 3/4 of an hour and you're going to send me £2 to make me feel better. That does not make me feel better. It was unbelievable. I managed to resolve it eventually. But yeah, I thought that was a derisory amount of money to offer me for the inconvenience. Debbie, you must have some things you want to share.
It really is interesting, though, isn't it? Because when you look at service issues, quite often, and this comes down to one of the things Jonathan just talked about, quite often it's because there's been a lack of communication within the organisation about, you know, maybe a root cause of something, but people don't know. Sometimes there's, you know, a lack of information about something that maybe is recorded incorrectly or something with on a system that's causing a problem. So they don't actually know what it is that is the issue to be fixed. And one of the things that I quite often think is, and sorry about this, guys, but if you had, you know, professionals in change, business improvement, business analysis, service design, you know, name it what you will, actually some of these issues could be dealt with. And one of the things that we seem to fall prey to a lot these days is there's a technological issue. And obviously, you know, there can be the very sort of unpredictable events where an organization is hacked, there's a cybersecurity issue, something like that, which is awful to deal with. But I read a lot about organizations where this is the issue, and they seem to go straight into sorting the technology out mode. As a customer, sometimes it's not the sorting out the technology that is going to impact you. There's a different outcome you need, which could be, I don't know, delivery of a product or something like that. And it just always strikes me that if there was, you know, some, I think you use the term like crack team of business analysts or service designers or business architects or whatever, that could actually look at a problem situation and say, okay, there's a problem with the technology, but this is what we can do as an organization to make this, you know, at least work to a certain extent for our customer. I just think sometimes that would be a really good way to look at it. And I'm not sure that a lot of organizations think that way, because everything is so technology focused and driven, and we're not thinking about, you know, maybe a bit more holistically about how we might get around it. Does that make sense?
Mm. And I think one of the challenges with that is actually, if we don't think about who we're going to involve when something does occur, we can get into sort of a panic mode and just look to try to respond. I mean, I was thinking about, it wasn't that long ago, there was one of the supermarkets, or a number of the supermarkets, just lost all of their till functionality for taking any electronic payments. And I think I was in one of the supermarkets at the time, and they, one of the particular supermarkets in our town, went over to taking cash payments, which was fine for those that had got cash payments, but they hadn't got any other way of taking other payments from anybody else. But other places closed down. They couldn't actually open the doors because they couldn't take the payments at all. The tills were just useless at that point. And maybe having that crack squad identified beforehand, they're right, something occurs, let's get those people together and try to think of other more holistic approaches rather than just, I'd say, that panic station view.
Mike, one of the techniques that I've been diving into recently is scenario analysis. And one of the things that I think where BAs and service designers and others can really help with is in advance of an issue, thinking through the scenarios that may or may not occur and trying to think through how would the service work should the payment systems be gone down, or if there's a flood, or if the staff calling sick, or some other issue. The other thing where I think scenario analysis can really help is thinking of different personas that might engage with your service. So what if it's a minor? What if it's a vulnerable adult? What if it's someone with an accessibility need, or some volume of customers? I don't know, it's a restaurant and you've got lots and lots of customers. How would you respond in that context and really thinking ahead of time so that the service works? I'm going to grumble again. Phone lines that say, you ring up and they say, oh, we're unprecedented phone calls and we're really busy. Well, why is that message being played all of the time? It's a lie.
Yeah. At some point, we go from an unprecedented level of demand to, no, this is the current level of demand. And I think 5 years or nearly 6 years on from COVID, I find it amazing that these places haven't actually got round to reducing the length of the queues to less than an hour in some organization. I find that amazing now. I think, okay, back in March to June 2020, that was a pretty reasonable excuse. All this time on, I think, yeah, maybe you're just not putting enough people into that role, or there's something else going wrong there.
Do you like what you've just said, though, Jonathan, about scenario analysis? Because I think obviously we have to look at things like business continuity. That's part of what we do. And there are a lot of professionals who work in business continuity, some of whom we work with. But that's business continuity. It's not technology continuity. And it's actually about making sure that you've thought through these scenarios and said, okay, well, if this was to happen, how would we overcome it? You know, what have we got in our business architecture, if you like, that would enable us to work around this? And sometimes it's not possible. But I do remember once, there was a store and they had a technology problem. I can't remember where it was. And so couldn't take online payments. So as somebody was trying to enter the store, they had somebody saying, we can't take online payments, but there is an ATM 10 yards away. Could you, you know, go and get some cash because we can take cash payments? Now, it's not ideal. Okay. But if I really needed something from that store, it gives me that sort of workaround that in the short term I might be happy to work with. And I was actually in a salon not that long ago where they often can't take online payments for various reasons. And I noticed they'd had an ATM installed in the salon. And I thought, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because they've obviously had a lot of people say, I can't, you know, I have to pay online because I haven't got cash. So they found a way to work around it. And I think that is, you know, scenario analysis and then contingency planning and thinking about business continuity. All of these things are the sorts of things we think about as change professionals. But we're not often called in enough, I think, to actually think about them these days. And maybe we should be.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a whole other episode there that we could explore in terms of the contingency planning, and I'll make a mental note of that so we can come back to it. But just sort of to bring things to a close now, any thoughts about what we can do as change professionals to get ourselves noticed a bit more to help out with some of that planning, addressing some of those service gaps when issues occur? sorry, I should say Jonathan or Debbie, whichever one of you would like to talk first.
So I'll jump in then. Debbie can have some thinking time. So look at the data, do the research, look at the quantitative and qualitative data around, well, what is the service offer and what is the real voice of the customer. I think is really, really key here. So it's not our opinion. Ask questions, ask those what if questions. What if the customer is of this particular type? What if there's an outage? What if, you know, you're trying to help to build quality and resilience into a service and consistency of the service. You ask the question, should we be playing that message? Oh, sorry, we're really busy at the moment, unprecedented call times, 24/7. It's kind of, should we be doing that? And then I really want to talk about one of my favorite techniques, and I'll do it very quickly. There's a technique, so I think you should expand and enhance your toolkit, but that one of the techniques I really like is called the zone of tolerance. And it, you basically put yourself in the customer's shoes and you ask, well, what would be a tolerable service? What would the lower end of that look like and a higher end? And then you ask, well, what would be an unacceptable level of service? You could talk about that and elicit information with your stakeholders. And then what would a really great service look like, an amazing service experience? So you start to make an informed design decision about the service based upon what's tolerable, what's the aspiration, what is it that we promise as an organization? So it's just a nice little tool that I quite like to help me to think about tolerance from a customer service perspective. So hopefully, Debbie, that's given you plenty of thinking time.
The problem is, it's given me so much thinking time that I'm sitting here thinking, well, there's that technique and there's that technique and there's that, because we have, you know, in our world of change practitioners, we've got all these techniques that we can use. And so I'm going to have to just pick one or two, I think, otherwise Mike will cut me off. But first of all, I think exploring, as you said, Jonathan, voice of the customer in terms of what are the customer experience requirements, what are the service outcome requirements, really understanding what they are and where people are trying to get to. And that also requires you to understand a little bit about empathy and really understanding people. I think my big go-to technique is always pop it, okay? Because that is the technique that says, look at this holistically. You know, if we know what the desired and expected outcomes are, then we can also start to think about, well, what if analysis, back to your scenarios, and then we can use pop it to explore where all the different possibilities are that can help us overcome some problems and maybe help the customer get to the outcome they want. So that's my sort of go-to suite of techniques. But I would also say that in the BA, service design, business architecture, product owner world, there are so many things we could do that one of my biggest thoughts is have a toolkit and think about which ones are relevant to manage a situation.
Yeah, and just to pick up on pop it, I love pop it as well. And I think pop it, we can apply pop it when we're actually looking at change. We can also think about it when there is some kind of interruption in the service, whatever, because we could have an interruption in any one of those areas of pop it, and whichever one it comes in on, we should be thinking about the other areas, because otherwise our solution to, or our, the way we address that problem may not be holistic. We may be causing ourselves other headaches later. So okay, well, thank you for your comments, Jonathan and Debbie, and thank you for to you, the audience, for joining us today. If you do have any ideas for future episodes of the BA Brew, then please contact us via babrew@assistkd.com. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.